Hello, and welcome to Catholicism in the Car. My name is Parker Zirbal. I have been, over the last few months, really interested in reading the documents of the 21 church councils, 21 ecumenical councils. In particular, I really wanted to get to know a little bit better the ones that were more obscure to me. So the Eighth Council to the Council of Trent. So the Eighth Council was the First Lateran Council, I believe, in the 11th century. There were three Lateran councils in a row, and then there were three councils of Lyon in Lyon, France. And then there was, I want to say, the Council of Ferrara, Florence, and then it was the Council of Constance, I think. Constance. It was the one where they healed the papal schism, and maybe I have Ferrara, Florence, and Constance flipped. Can't remember. And then it was the first Fourth Lateran Council, I think, was in the early 1500s, like 1515 to 1517. And then it was the Council of Trent. I think I got that right. Might be wrong. Anyway, there was a bunch of them in there. And they are fascinating. I find it really fascinating because it gives you, reading like first source documents from history, really let you understand how people of previous ages, even long, long ago, are just like you and me. Like, human nature does not change. It really doesn't. I feel like when I was growing up, and it seems like this is pretty consistent throughout the last century or so, in the West at least, people have really tried to push the idea that somehow modern man is different than pre-modern man. So, for some reason, since we have, you know, starting off with the Second Industrial Revolution in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, and then into the Computer Revolution and the Digital Revolution more recently, for some reason we think because we have greater tools and technology at our disposal, somehow we are different in our human nature. Which is just, it just goes to show how much people don't generally think about these things. Like, yes, it could be that, I mean, we have slightly different desires, at least on, like, if you were to look at the human desires as, like, a tree, the leaves might change depending on the season. Some branches might fall off and things, but the trunk never changes. Our human nature, like, our core, the core of who we are, and then even in our thinking, like, the core of the thinking of humanity doesn't really change all that much. I've done a lot of reading of Plato and Aristotle and a few of the pre-Socratics, which, so Aristotle was the most recent of all of those, and he died in the 320s. I think he lived from the 370s to the 320s, BC, so before Christ. He was the tutor of Alexander the Great, and reading his works, I mean, he has so many pages that are at least attributed to him, the vast majority of which we are very certain is from his own pen. Now, granted, our manuscripts that we have are only from, like, the 11th century, which is crazy. That's insane. And we have so much confidence in academia about who this guy is. I mean, that's another, like, thing. About people argue and bicker about the who wrote the Gospels and things like that, and did St. Paul write the writings he's attributed to have written? And we have some of those writings that go back to the 300s, 400s. I think we have fragments that go back to the second century, so the 100s AD. We have certain fragments that carbon date back to then. And the oldest manuscripts we have are from the 400s. The oldest Latin Vulgate that we have, it's the oldest full manuscript of the Old Testament and New Testament combined. It's the oldest codex that we have of the entire Bible, and it's from the 400s. So that's over half a millennium before our earliest manuscript of Aristotle. And then we have manuscripts of the Greek Septuagint, which is the Old Testament written in Greek, which was compiled, after the time of Alexander the Great. It was while, like, what was the guy's name? Something or other. Started with a P. He was one of the delegates that Alexander had made over the land of Israel and I think Egypt as well. And so he had delegated a bunch of Jews to write out their holy scriptures in Greek, in ancient Greek, because he was so fascinated by it. And the Greeks really were fascinated by the Jews. They saw them as quite full of wisdom. And the story goes with the Septuagint. Excuse me. I know I'm going on a ton of kind of rabbit trails here, but it's kind of fun. The Septuagint, there's a story that goes with it where they had 70 like elders or scribes come together, and the king, emperor, the one that Alexander had basically deputized for that area, he said, okay, all 70 of you, you are to each write out a manuscript, a translation of the Hebrew scriptures. And so they each wrote them out, and all 70 of their manuscripts were exact, exactly corresponded with every other one. They had done this in isolation. Most people contribute that to being a miracle. It could very well be that they were just freaking awesome at translating and at transcribing things. But I would say it's probably a miraculous element is in play there, if indeed that did happen. But anyway, so the Septuagint, even among the Jewish community, became quite popular because they had been taken over by Greek culture, basically, when Alexander came through, and then after Alexander, for the next, till about 72 AD when the Romans came in and sacked Jerusalem, burned down the temple, and all that crazy stuff. So they were basically under Greek rule for 300 some odd years, maybe more. Maccabean revolts happened within there around the 150s BC, all that kind of fun stuff. So, anyway, I was talking about Aristotle and his stuff and then his manuscripts, and now I'm forgetting. I went on such a long rabbit hole, I forgot what trail I was, the actual trail I was on. That's a conundrum. I am almost to my destination, so we might just end it there. Yeah.